Chapter 4, Momentum. I'd like to introduce you to a very good friend of mine. This friend, also close to Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Richard Branson, Michael Jordan, Lance Armstrong, Michael Phelps, and every other superachiever, will impact your life like no other. I'd like to introduce you to Mo, or Big Mo as I like to call it. Big Mo, without a doubt, is one of the most powerful and enigmatic forces of success. You can't see or feel Mo, but you know when you've got it. You can't count on Mo showing up to every occasion, but when it does, wow, Big Mo can catapult you into the stratosphere of success. And once you've got Mo on your side, there's almost no way anyone can catch you. I'm excited about this chapter. When you implement the ideas outlined ahead, your payoff will be 1,000 times or more what you paid for this book. Seriously, these ideas are big. Harnessing the power of Big Mo. If you remember your high school physics class, you do, don't you? You'll recall Newton's first law, also known as the law of inertia. Objects at rest tend to stay at rest unless acted on by an outside force. Objects in motion tend to stay in motion unless something stops their momentum. Put another way, couch potatoes tend to stay couch potatoes. Achievers, people who get into a successful rhythm, continue busting their butts and end up achieving more and more. It's not easy to build momentum, but once you do, look out. Do you remember playing on the merry-go-round when you were a kid? A bunch of your friends piled on, weighing the thing down, and then chanted as you worked to get the thing moving. Getting started was slow going. The first step was always the hardest, getting it to move from a standstill. You had to push and pull, grimace and groan, and throw your entire body into the effort. One step, two steps, three steps. It seemed like you were getting nowhere. After a long and hard effort, finally, you were able to get up a little bit of speed and start running alongside it. Even though you were moving and your friends were cheering louder, to get the speed you really wanted, you had to keep running faster and faster, pulling it behind you as you ran with all your might. Finally, success. You jumped on and joined your friends in the joy of feeling the wind in your face and watching the outside world turn into a smear of colors. After a while, when the merry-go-round started to slow down, you'd hop off and run alongside for a minute, get the speed back up, or you could simply give it a couple of good pushes and then hop back on. Once the merry-go-round was spinning at a good clip, momentum took over, making it easy to keep it going. Adopting any change is the same way. You get started by taking one small step, one action at a time. Progress is slow. But once a newly formed habit has kicked in, Big Mo joins the party. Your success and results compound rapidly. The same thing happens when a rocket ship launches. The space shuttle uses more fuel during the first few minutes of flight than it does the entire rest of the trip. Why is that? Because it has to break free of the pull of gravity. Once it does, it can glide into orbit. So for you, what's the hard part? Getting off the ground. Your old ways and your old conditioning are just like the inertia of the merry-go-round or the pull of gravity. Everything just wants to stay at rest or stay the same. You'll need a lot of energy to break your inertia and get your new enterprise underway. But once you get momentum, you will be hard to stop, virtually unbeatable, even though you're now just putting out considerably less effort while receiving greater results. Have you ever wondered why successful people tend to get more successful? The rich get richer, the happy get happier, and the lucky get luckier. They've got Mo. When it rains, it pours. But momentum can work on both sides of the equation. It can work for you or against you. Since the compound effect is always working, negative habits, when left unchecked, can build up steam and send you into a tailspin of quote-unquote unlucky circumstances and consequences. That's what our friend Brad from Chapter 1 experienced. He gained 33 pounds with a few small bad habits and experienced major job and marriage stress because of the negative momentum those habits generated. The law of inertia says objects at rest tend to stay at rest. That's the compound effect working against you. The more time you spend on that couch watching Two and a Half Men, the harder it will be for you to get up and get moving. So let's start right now. How do you get Big Mo to pay you a visit? You build up to it. You get in the groove, the zone, by doing things we've covered so far. 1. Making new choices based on your goals and core values. 2. Putting those choices to work through positive behaviors. 3. Repeating those healthy actions long enough to establish new habits. 4. Building routines and rhythms into your daily disciplines. 5. Staying consistent over a long enough period of time. Then, bang, Big Mo kicks in your door, and that's a good thing. And you're virtually unstoppable. Think about swimmer Michael Phelps, who won a legendary 8 gold medals at the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing. How did he do it? Working with his coach, Bob Bowman, Phelps honed his talents over the course of 12 years. Together, they built routines and rhythms and developed a consistency of performance that prepared Phelps to catch momentum just at the right time, the Olympic Games. Phelps and Bowman's symbiotic relationship is legendary for its scope and ambition and its utter predictability. Bowman required such consistency when it came to practice that one of Phelps' most vivid memories is when Bowman allowed him to finish a training session 15 minutes early so he could get ready for a middle school dance. That's one time in 12 years. No wonder Phelps was so unbeatable in the pool. Chances are you have an iPod. Ever think about the evolution that made it possible for that little gizmo to wind up in your pocket? Apple was around a long time before they launched the iPod. While Mac computers have always had an intensely loyal following, they still comprise only a small fraction of the overall PC market. The iPod certainly wasn't the first MP3 player out there. Actually, Apple was late to the game. But they had something powerful going for them: the consistency of their efforts in maintaining customer loyalty, a steadfast commitment to high quality, innovative design, and ease of use. They made the MP3 player simple, cool, easy to use, and to play with, and promoted it through entertaining and inventive ad campaigns. It worked. It hit a nerve. But the iPod wasn't an overnight success like a lot of people assume. In 2001, the year Apple released the iPod, they went from 30% revenue growth the year previous to negative 33%. The following year, 2002, was also a negative revenue growth at negative 2%. But 2003, they saw a slight shift to the positive with 18%. Growth came again in 2004, up 33%, and in 2005, they caught Mo, and bang, Apple catapulted to 68% revenue growth and now holds more than 70% of the MP3 player market share. As you know, Big Mo has since helped them dominate the smartphone market with the iPhone and the digital music distribution market with iTunes. This momentum has also given them a resurgence of growth in their original market of personal computers. With Big Mo on their side, I wouldn't be surprised to see them expand into other markets. Google was a small, struggling search engine for a long while. Today, it too owns more than 60% of its market. YouTube, the video sharing space created in February of 2005, officially launched in November of that year. But it wasn't until they featured the Lazy Sunday digital short that originally aired on Saturday Night Live that people started going to YouTube in huge numbers to find it. That YouTube video clip went viral. It got more than 5 million views before NBC asked to have it taken down. Then there was no way to catch him. They had Mo. Today, YouTube owns more than 60% of the video market. Google caught up with YouTube and the two young founders and paid them $1.65 billion to buy their Mo. Wow. So, what do Michael Phelps, Apple, Google, and YouTube have in common? They were doing the same things before and after they achieved momentum. Their habits, disciplines, routines, and their consistency were the keys that unlocked momentum for each, and they became unstoppable when Big Mo showed up to their party. Routine power. Some of our best intentions fail because we don't have a system of execution. When it comes down to it, your new attitudes and behaviors must be incorporated into your monthly, weekly, and daily routines to affect any real and positive change. A routine is something you do every day without fail so that eventually, like brushing your teeth or putting on your seatbelt, you do it without conscious thought. Similar to our discussion in the habits section, if you look at anything that you do successfully, you'll see that you've probably developed a routine for it. These routines ease life stresses by making our actions automatic and effective. To reach new goals and develop new habits, it's necessary to create new routines to support your objectives. The greater the challenge, the more rigorous our routines need to be. Ever wonder why they make military boot camp so hard? Where relatively minor tasks like making the bed, shining your shoes, or standing at attention become over-the-top important? Building routines to prep soldiers for combat is the most effective way to elicit efficient, productive, and reliable performance under intense pressure. The seemingly simplistic routines built and developed during basic training are so exact that soft, fearful, slovenly teenagers are transformed into lean, confident, mission-driven soldiers in only 8 to 12 weeks. Their routines are so well rehearsed that these young soldiers can instinctively act with precision in the middle of the chaos of combat. That intense level of training and practice prepares soldiers to carry out their duties even under the threat of imminent death. Now, your days might not be as dangerous, but without the proper routines built into your schedule, the results of your life can be unruly and unnecessarily hard. Developing a routine of predictable, daily disciplines prepares you to be victorious on the battlefield of life. Golfer Jack Nicklaus was famous for his pre-shot routine. He was religious about the dance that he would do before every shot. A series of routine mental and physical steps that got him fully focused and ready for each shot. Jack would start out behind the ball, then pick out one or two intermediate spots between the ball and the target. As he walked around and approached the ball, the first thing that he would do is line his club face up with the intermediate target. He wouldn't put his feet into position until he felt that he had his club face properly squared up. Then he would take his stance. From there, he would waggle the club, look out to his ultimate target, then back to his intermediate target, and back to the golf club, and repeat that view a couple of times. Then, and only then, would he strike the ball. During one of the important majors, a psychologist timed Nicklaus from the moment he pulled the club out of the bag until the moment he hit the ball. Guess what? Each shot, from the first tee to the 18th green, the timing of Jack's routine supposedly never varied more than 1 second. That is amazing. The same psychologist measured Greg Norman during his unfortunate collapse at the 1996 Masters. Lo and behold, his pre-shot routine got faster and faster as the round progressed. Varying his routine stunted his rhythm and consistency, and he was never able to catch momentum. The moment Norman changed his routine, his performance became unpredictable and his results erratic. Football kickers likewise cherish their pre-kick routines, which allow them to get into sync with the thousands of times they have done the same action. Without a pre-kick routine, their performance under game-time pressure greatly diminishes. Pilots go through their pre-flight checklist. Even when a pilot has logged thousands of hours and the plane just came in from a perfect performance review from a previous destination, the pilot goes through a pre-flight checklist every time without fail. This not only prepares the plane, but more importantly, centers the pilot and prepares him or her for the upcoming performance. Of all the high achievers and business owners I've worked with, I've seen that along with good habits, each has developed routines for accomplishing necessary daily disciplines. It's the only way any of us can predictably regulate our behavior. There simply isn't any way around it. A daily routine built on good habits and discipline separates the most successful amongst us from everyone else. A routine is exceptionally powerful. To create powerful and effective routines, you must first decide what behaviors and habits you want to implement. Take a moment to review your goals from Chapter 3, as well as the behaviors you want to add and subtract. Now it's your turn to be Jack Nicklaus and figure out your best pre-shot routine. Be intentional about what components belong. Once you establish, say, a morning routine, I want you to consider it cast in concrete until further notice. You get up, you do it, no argument. If someone or something interrupts you, start back at the beginning to anchor your foundation for the performance that follows. Bookend your days. The key to becoming world-class in your endeavors is to build your performance around world-class routines. It can be difficult, even futile, to predict or control what will show up in the middle of your workday, but you can always control how your day starts and ends. I have routines for both. I'll share aspects of each here to give you some ideas and to help you better understand the power and importance of building your new behaviors into disciplined routines. Starting with my goals in mind, I design my behaviors and routines accordingly. Perhaps in sharing some of what works for me, you'll identify strategies you'd like to try. Rise and shine. My morning routine is my Jack Nicklaus pre-shot preparation. It sets me up for the entire day. Because it happens every morning, it's locked in and I don't have to think about it. My iPhone alarm goes off at 5 a.m. Well, confession, sometimes 5:30 a.m. And I hit the snooze button. Then I know I have 8 minutes. Why 8? I have no idea. Ask Steve Jobs. He programmed it. During those 8 minutes, I do 3 things. First, I think of all the things that I'm grateful for. I know that I need to attune my mind to abundance. The world looks, acts, and responds to you very differently when you start your day with a feeling and orientation of gratitude for that which you already have. Second, I do something that sounds a bit odd. I send love to someone. The way to get love is to give love, and the one thing I want more of is love. I give love by thinking of one person, anyone. It could be a friend, a relative, a coworker, or even just somebody I met in the supermarket. It really doesn't matter. And then I send love to them by imagining all the things that I wish and hope for them. Some would call this a blessing or a prayer. I call it a mental love letter. Third, I think about my number one goal and decide which 3 things I'm going to do on this day to move closer to reaching it. For example, at the time of this recording, my number one goal is to deepen the love and intimacy in my marriage. So each morning I plan out 3 things that I can do to make sure that my wife feels loved, respected, and beautiful. Now when I get up, I put on a pot of coffee, and while it's brewing, I do a series of stretches for about 10 minutes. This is something I picked up from Dr. Oz. If you've lifted weights your whole life as I have, you get stiff. I realized that the only way I was going to incorporate more stretching into my life was to make it a routine. I had to figure out where in my schedule I could possibly fit this in, and while the coffee is brewing, is as good a time as any. Once I finish my stretches and pour my cup of joe, I sit down in my comfy leather recliner, set my iPhone for 30 minutes, no more, no less, and read something positive and instructional. When the alarm sounds, I take my most important project and work on it for an hour of completely focused and undistracted effort. Notice that I haven't opened up my email yet. Then every morning at 7 a.m., I have what I call my calibration appointment, a reoccurring appointment set in my calendar, where I take 15 minutes to calibrate my day. This is where I brush over my top 3 1-year and 5-year goals, my key quarterly objectives, and my top goal for the week and month. Then, here's the most important part of the calibration appointment. I review or set my top 3 MVPs, that is, most valuable priorities for that day. I ask myself, if I only did 3 things today, what are the actions that will produce the greatest results moving me closer to my big goals? Then, and only then, do I open up email and send out a flurry of tasks and delegations to get the rest of my team started on their day. And then I quickly close down my email and go to work on my MVPs. Now, the rest of the day can take on a million different shapes, but as long as I go through my morning routine, a majority of my key disciplines that I need to be practicing are already taken care of, and I'm already properly grounded and prepared to perform at a much higher level than if I started out each day erratically, or worse, with a set of bad habits. Sweet dreams. In the evening, I like to do what's called cash out, something I learned from waiting tables in my youth. Before we could go home, we had to cash out, meaning turn in all our receipts, credit card slips, and the cash. Everything had to add up or there was big trouble. It too is important to cash out your day's performance. Compared to your plan for the day, how did it go? What do you need to carry over to tomorrow's plan? What else needs to be added based on what showed up throughout the day? What's no longer important and needs to be scratched out? Additionally, I like to log in my journal any new ideas, ahas, or insights that I picked up throughout the day. This is how I've collected more than 40 journals of incredible ideas, insights, and strategies. Finally, I like to read at least 10 pages of an inspirational book before I go to sleep. I know the mind continues to process the last information consumed before bedtime, so I want to focus my attention on something constructive and helpful in making progress with my goals and ambitions. So, that's it. All hell could break loose throughout the day, but because I control the bookends, I know I'm always going to start and finish strong. Shake it up. Every so often, I like to interrupt my routines. Otherwise, life gets stale and I plateau. An easy example is working out with weights. When I work out the same way, at the same time, doing the same repetitive movements week after week, my body stops showing the compounded results. I get bored, lose my passion, and Big Mo is a no-show. That's why it's important to mix it up. Challenge yourself in new ways and freshen up your experience. Right now, I'm working on adding more adventure into my life. I set weekly, monthly, and yearly goals to do something I wouldn't normally do. Now, most of the time, it's nothing earth-shattering, but things such as eating different kinds of food, taking a class, visiting a new destination, or joining a club to meet new people. This change of pace makes me feel alive, helps recapture my passion, and offers me opportunities for fresh perspectives. So, look at your routines. If something that used to energize you has become the same old, or is no longer generating powerful results, switch it up. Getting into a rhythm. Finding your new groove. Once your daily disciplines have become a routine, you want the succession of those steps to create a rhythm. When your disciplines and actions jibe into a regular weekly, monthly, quarterly, and yearly rhythm, it's like laying a big welcome mat at the front door for Big Mo. Here's an analogy. It's like the big giant wheels of a steam locomotive. At a standstill, it takes very little to keep it from moving forward. A 1-inch block of wood placed under the front wheel will do the job. It takes an incredible amount of steam to get the pistons to move that cause a series of connections to get the big giant wheels to just budge. It's a slow process, but once the train starts rolling, the wheels get into a rhythm. If the pressure remains consistent, the train gains momentum, and then watch out. At 55 miles an hour, that same train can crash through a 5-foot steel-reinforced concrete wall and keep on going. Envisioning your success as an unstoppable locomotive may help you stay enthusiastic about getting into your rhythm. Along with my daily rhythms, I also plan ahead. For instance, in looking again at my goal of deepening the love and intimacy of my marriage, I designed a weekly, monthly, and quarterly rhythm schedule. I know it doesn't sound too romantic, but maybe you've noticed even when something's a high priority for you, if it isn't scheduled on your calendar, it often doesn't happen, right? Certainly not with the regularity you'll need to get into any kind of rhythm. So here's how it works. Every Friday night is date night, and Georgia and I go out or do something special together. At 6 p.m., an alarm goes off on both our iPhones, and no matter what we're doing, date night is on. Every Saturday is FD, Family Day, which means no working. Essentially, sundown on Friday night until sunup on Sunday morning is time we devote to the marriage and family. If you don't create these boundaries, one day has a tendency to flow into the next. Unfortunately, the people who get shoved aside are often the most important. Now, every Sunday night, also at 6 p.m., we have our RR, Relationship Review. This is a practice I picked up from relationship experts Linda and Richard Iyer. During this time, we discuss the previous week's wins, losses, as well as the adjustments we need to make in our relationship. We start the conversation by telling each other a few things we appreciate about the other during the previous week. It's helpful to start off with the good stuff. Then, using an idea I picked up from my interview with Jack Canfield, we ask each other, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, how would you rate our relationship this week? This really gets the discussion of wins and losses flowing. Oh boy! Then we discuss the adjustments that need to be made through this follow-up question. What would it take to make the experience a 10? By the end of the discussion, both of us feel heard and validated, and we've made our observations and wishes clear moving into the next week. This is an incredible process. I highly recommend it, if you dare. Now, every month, Georgia and I schedule something unique and memorable. Jim Rohn taught me this. Life is simply a collection of experiences. Our goal should be to increase the frequency and intensity of good experiences. Once a month, we try to do something that creates an experience that has some memorable intensity. It could be driving up to the mountains or going on an adventurous hike or driving up to LA to try a new fancy restaurant out or going sailing in the bay, whatever. Something out of the ordinary that has a heightened experience and creates an indelible memory. And once a quarter, we plan a 2 or 3 day getaway. I like to do a quarterly review of all my goals and life patterns, and this is a great time to do a deeper check-in on how things are going in our relationship. Then we have our special travel vacation, plus our holiday traditions and our New Year's hike and goal-setting ritual. You can see that once all of this is scheduled, you no longer have to think about what you need to be doing. Everything happens naturally. We've created a rhythm that gives us momentum. Allow me to jump off the script again here and share something Harvey McKay told me about marriage. He said, "I learned the day I got married that anyone can fall in love. It takes no talent whatsoever to fall in love. But to remain in love is a real challenge, and you have to make that priority 1, 2, and 3 in your life." On the topic of creating a great marriage, one of the great models for my life was my mentor Paul J. Meyer and his wife Jane. The best way to explain this is a letter I received not too long ago from a man named David in Buckley, Washington. David wrote how he had been at a friend's house and was asked to make a beer run, but his car was blocked in, so he borrowed a friend's car. When he got in the car, the Success CD was playing with the interview between Paul J. Meyer and me back from our June issue of 2008. He thought it was the radio, so he just let it play. In the interview, I was asking Paul how he's kept such an amazing magic in his marriage of 37 years. Paul was explaining how he has sent Jane flowers every week for 37 years, and how he purposefully and intentionally has treated her the same every day as he did during courtship. He never stopped courting her. Every day of their marriage, Paul said he found reasons to tell her he loved her at least 10 times, every day. I knew Paul and Jane personally, and I can attest to this. While Dave was driving, listening to this interview, for some reason, at that time, in that moment, those words penetrated Dave's heart. That evening, he sat down with his wife and said, "I realized I've been wrapped up in myself, not giving you the attention, respect, reverence, and love you deserve. I'd like to renew my commitment to you tonight, to be the man I promised to be when we first got married. I love you, Katie. I always have. But now I promise to tell you and show you every day." Dave wrote that his wife, Katie, burst into tears and couldn't speak for several minutes. When she finally calmed down, she said, "I have been living with a broken heart for many months now. I didn't think you loved me anymore, and the pain became too much. 2 days earlier, I met with an attorney to file for divorce. I was planning to tell you tomorrow morning." Dave said, "That CD saved my marriage. It saved my life. Paul Meyer's example showed me how I could be in my marriage. The past year has been the best of my life. We've never been more in love and never happier together. Thank you." The lesson here is, it doesn't take very much to completely turn around your marriage, and it doesn't take very much to neglect or destroy it and create lots of pain around you. Stay focused and consistent on the little things every day that make for magic in your marriage and magic in the results of every area of your life. If you stay focused on the small, smart choices, the compound effect of them is profound. Registering your rhythm. I want to share with you something I created for myself that helps me keep track of the rhythm of a new behavior. I call it the Rhythm Register, and I think you'll find it extremely helpful for you too. If you want to drink more water or take more steps each day or acknowledge your spouse more affectionately, whatever behavior you've decided you need to move towards your goal, you'll want to track it to see the evidence and to make sure that you're firing on all cylinders and establishing a rhythm. You can download a copy of that document for free at thecompoundeffect.com/free. The rhythms of life. When people get started in any new endeavor, they almost always overdo it. Of course, I want you to feel excited about setting up a rhythm for success, but you need to find a program that you can absolutely, positively do in the long term without renegotiation. I don't want you thinking of the rhythms you can do for this week, month, or even the next 90 days. I want you to think about what you can do for the rest of your life. The compound effect, the positive results you want to experience in your life, will be the result of smart choices and actions repeated consistently over time. You win when you take the right steps day in and day out, but you set yourself up for failure by doing too much too soon. A friend to the success team, who will remain unnamed to protect the guilty, decided after seeing a picture I'd posted of him on Twitter that he was going to get in shape. This was a massive shift of lifestyle for him. On the job, he sits for at least a dozen hours a day, and he hates to exercise. Previously, he explained that he would find ways of avoiding using certain dishes or accessing files if it required him to squat and bend down to get them. That's how much of an aversion he had to physical activity. Still, he made a resolution to get in shape. He joined a gym, hired a personal trainer, and began working out 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. Richard, let's call him. I said, "That's a mistake. You will not be able to maintain that commitment and will eventually stop doing it. You're setting yourself up for failure." He pushed back, assuring me that he changed forever. Even his trainer had recommended the intense push. "I'm committed," he said. "I want to be able to see my abs." "Richard, what's your real goal?" I asked him. I knew that he wasn't gunning to be on the cover of Men's Fitness. "I want to be trim. I want to be healthy," he told me. "Why?" I asked. "I want vitality. I want to be here long enough to see my kids have kids," he replied. These were his real, meaningful motivations. Richard wanted to be in it for the long haul. That meant he was signing on not for bikini season, but for a long-term commitment to fitness. "Okay," I said. "You've convinced me, but you're overdoing it. You're going to get 2 or 3 months down the road and you're going to say, 'I don't have 2 hours to work out, so I guess I can't do it today.' That's going to happen to you over and over again. Working out 5 days a week will turn into 2 or 3, then you'll get discouraged. Soon it will be over. I know you're really fired up right now, so let's do this. Do your 2 hours a day, 5 days a week for now. It takes a lot of steam to get the wheels to budge from inertia, remember? But don't do it any longer than 60 or 90 days. Then I want you to scale it down to 1 hour or 1 hour and 15. You can still do your 5 days a week if you have to, but I would probably encourage you to go to 4. Do that another 60 to 90 days. Then I want you to consider 1 hour a day for a minimum of 3 days a week, four if you're feeling extra spry. That's the program I want you to work towards, because if you don't get into something you can maintain, you won't do it at all. I really had to struggle to get Richard to comprehend this, because at the moment, he was all gung-ho. He thought he was going to be able to stick with this new routine for a lifetime. For someone who's never worked out, to start working out 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, is a surefire dead end. You have to build a program that you can do for 50 years, not 5 weeks or 5 months. It's okay if you go strong for a while, but you've got to be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel so that you can start scaling back. You can always find 45 minutes to an hour a few times a week, but to find 2 hours, 5 days a week to make your routine work, that'll never happen. Remember, consistency, that's the critical component of success. The power of consistency. I mentioned at the beginning of this book that if there's one discipline that gives me the competitive advantage, it's my ability to be consistent. Nothing kills Big Mo quicker and with more certainty than a lack of consistency. Even good, passionate, and ambitious people with good intentions can fall short when it comes to consistency, but it's a powerful tool that you can use to launch the flight towards your goals. Think of it like this comparison. If you and I flew planes from Los Angeles to Manhattan, but you took off and had to land in every state in between, while I flew straight through, even if you went 500 miles an hour while you were in the air, and I only traveled at a rate of 200 miles an hour, I'd still beat you by a big margin. The time and energy it takes for you to repeatedly stop and start and get back to momentum makes your trip at least 10 times as long. In fact, most likely you wouldn't even make it. You'd run out of fuel, energy, motivation, belief, will at some point. It's far easier and requires a lot less energy to take off once and just maintain a regular speed, even if it's slower than most everyone else all along the way. The pump well. When you start thinking about slacking off on your routines and rhythms, consider the massive cost of inconsistency. It's not the loss of the single action that you're not doing, or the tiny results that it creates. It's the utter collapse and loss of momentum your entire progress will suffer. Think of a hand-pumped water well, which uses a pipe to draw water from the water table several hundred feet underground. To get the water to the surface, you have to pump the well's lever to create suction that brings the water above ground and out the spout. When most people start a new endeavor, they grab the lever and start pumping really hard. Just as Richard was with his plan to get fit, they're excited and committed. They pump and pump and pump and pump, and after a few minutes or a few weeks, when they don't see any water or results, they give up pumping the lever altogether. They don't realize how long it takes to create the vacuum needed to suck the water up the pipe and eventually out the spout and into their bucket. Just like the merry-go-round, rocket ship, or steam engine breaking free of inertia, it takes time, massive energy, and consistency to pump water. While most people give up, wise people continue to pump. Those who persevere and continue to pump the lever will eventually get a few drops of water. This is when a lot of people say, "You've got to be kidding me! All this pumping for what? A few measly drops? Forget it." Many people throw their hands up in defeat and quit, but wise people persist further. And here's where the magic happens. If you continue to pump, it doesn't take long before you'll get a full and steady stream of water. You have your success. Now the water is flowing. You no longer need to pump the lever as hard or as quickly. It becomes easy, actually. All you have to do to keep the pressure steady is to just pump the lever consistently. That's the compound effect. Now, what happens if you let go of the lever for too long? The water falls back into the ground and you're back to square one. If you try to pump the lever easily and steadily like you were, you won't get any water. Mo is gone. Water is at the bottom. The only way to get it back up is to pump it really hard all over again. That's how most of us lead our lives, in fits and starts. We get a new business venture going, and then we cut out on vacation. We start up a routine of making 10 prospecting calls a day, strike a little gold, and then shift into neutral. We get hopped up about our new date night routine with our spouse. But in a few weeks, it's back to Netflix and microwave popcorn on the couch Friday nights. I regularly see people buy a new book or sign up for a new program or seminar and go like crazy for a couple of weeks or even months. And then they stop and end up right back where they started. Does that sound familiar? Miss only a couple of weeks of anything. Workouts at the gym, affectionate gestures toward your spouse, or the phone calls that are part of your prospecting routine. And you don't just lose the results those 2 weeks would have produced. If that's all you lost, which is what most people assume, not much damage would be done. But by slacking off, even for a short time, you've killed Mo. It's dead. And that's a tragedy. Winning the race is all about pace. Be the tortoise, the person who, given enough time, will beat virtually anybody in any competition as a result of positive habits and behaviors applied consistently. That'll put the mojo in your momentum and keep it there. Making the right choice, holding to the right behaviors, practicing perfect habits, staying consistent, and keeping your momentum is easier said than done, I know, especially in the dynamically changing and always challenging world we share with billions of people. In the next chapter, I will discuss the many influences that, mostly unknowingly, can help or hinder your ability to succeed. These influences are pervasive, persuasive, and constant. Learn how to use them or you might end up losing because of them. Let me show you how. Oh, and hey, homework alert. I would be remiss if I didn't remind you to once again go back to the book. Take a look at the summary action steps so that you can get the great tips offered there about how to take all this knowledge and implement it in your life.